New media, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Tomorrow Show. Its mission, to unite and assist fellow loners and dreamers, to advise and amuse mankind. On behalf of the Not Sam Network, to boldly go where no broadcast, no Not Samsonite, has gone before. The Tomorrow Show, with Kevin Undergaro and Roxy Stryer. Featuring one celebrity husband's midlife crisis, a reformed party girl's quarterlife crisis, and millennials in Star Trek costumes. Sitting in the captain's chair, the first officer of your tomorrow, Roxy Stryer.
Greetings, people of tomorrow. We are back aboard the ship. I'm Roxy Stryer because Kevin Undergaro is still on, yes, I know he loves when I say this, a super secret mission. He says his life's not that interesting. I beg to differ. But today, even though Kevin is not here, we are welcoming back an amazing past person from the Tomorrow Show. You know her, you love her. It's Lauren LaGrasso.
Hey, Roxy Stryer.
So strange. Like, it's been a long time.
It has. You had me back very kindly.
Yes, we did.
Earlier this year. Mm-hmm. And I just am honored every time I come back. It's like coming home. So thank you for having me.
That was almost a year ago now.
Was it really?
Well, it was at least half a year ago.
I feel like I blinked and I was back.
What month are we in?
Space travel's weird.
Yeah. We jumped time galaxies?
Bam. I guess time galaxies, my favorite.
I'll be honest, I really don't understand how space travel works, not even in the movies. Maybe she can help me out because she's good with Star Wars stuff. Steph Sabrah.
Time is but a construct, Rox. We don't know where,
what
how
does that
long.
Mean?
It means that sometimes it takes a light year, sometimes it takes a minute. No one understands time, we just exist.
Will we ever move as fast as the speed of light? What's faster, light or sound? Light?
I don't know.
I think light is faster, I can tell you that much.
That's Jeff Graham making us all look like fools in here.
Oh, that's my goal.
Thank you for knowing that that's what that is, considering I definitely dropped out of all of the science classes, even in high school. I really should not have been able to graduate with the small amount of science I took. Michael Klass, also here. Michael.
Also here.
Well, okay. First of all, I'm speaking in facts. He's also here, which is true. Also
can you
amazing.
Believe it?
Or I could do what Lauren did, which is just say, you're so tall.
Oh my gosh, I feel like Michael Klass got taller. He is just a beanstalk pure manhood.
That's literally like his dream to hear somebody say. You're a beanstalk of pure manhood.
How tall
Michael.
Are you? 6'5"?
6'5".
God.
No, you
go play some basketball
when
already.
When you say that, you like slow down time to every time someone else.
Wait, are you really
6'5"? 6'5".
How tall are other people?
Not that tall.
How tall are other people? I don't know, Roxy. How tall are you?
I bet you he's one of the tallest you know.
Well, I'm being serious. Like, how tall is Kev?
6'1", maybe?
So you're wow, you're 4 inches taller than he is.
Yeah.
I think of him as a
Jeff's
giant.
Jeff's 6'3".
You're 6'3"?
I'm 6'1½, 6'2". Oh.
We all lie about our height.
I have to be honest. Michael's not 6'5".
I think he is.
Right.
I really think
I've
he is.
Lying.
Are you 6'4¾ or something?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's fine. Up. We all do that.
Yeah.
I know that that's true.
I don't know.
I feel like if we measured you, you'd be 6'3½".
Get a measure.
I think people think you're taller than you are because of your big presence.
Possibly. Mm-hmm. Possibly. But I also don't lie about my height, Michael. He doesn't like this game.
Shots
you're very
fired.
Not liking this one. Michael, it's I like don't actually know, but you made fun of me for saying that you're here. So now I've got to pick on something else about you.
You know, I did get one of the best compliments I've had like in a long time prior to the show from Miss Steph Sabrah.
Do tell.
Was it that she's not a 7?
No.
Michael called us 7s 2 weeks ago.
What
it was brutal.
At like hotness?
Yeah.
Level?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
It was awful.
Oh,
you're
awful.
Both 10s. We're not dropping it, Lauren. So I'm just going to keep doing that throughout the episode. But
I totally forgot.
That doesn't make any
that
sense.
Someone at one point had called me a 4. And I think I blocked out that memory.
Oh, that person's dead to us.
Yeah, because I told someone, I was like, oh yeah, someone called me a 7 on air. It was really humbling. And then they were like, don't you remember when someone called you a 4 on the street?
They shouted out the window, you're a 4?
It was like these group
really?
Of teens and they're like, you're a 4.
Wait, Michael, what was the
maybe
compliment?
They had a size 4.
Okay, so Michael was reaching for a uniform and my eyes just caught his path, and I noticed Michael has a great ass.
That's true. Wow. That's true.
I've never acknowledged it. But you want to know what? Huge compliment coming from the ass queen over here. So, yeah. You want to know what I was told about my ass this week? What? My friend Jesse, who I went to high school with, who's brutally honest with me because we've known each other since we were like
the
pot, eight.
The guy makes pots?
Yes, the guy I that makes him. Pots.
Me too.
He was like, oh no. He was like, wow, Rox, have you been going to the gym? Because I was saying goodbye, he moved to China to work on the pots. And he was like, you've been going to the gym? And I was like, yeah, I've been working on my squats. He goes, I know, because we all called you pancake ass in high school, and now you've got one. And I was like, you all called me pancake ass? And he was like, no.
Oh!
I was like, boys suck.
That is so...
There have been many great humans with flat asses.
Thank you so much.
My mom has a flat ass, and she's one of the greatest people I know.
But I don't feel like I have a flat butt.
I've never noticed your butt being big or small.
I have a non-noticeable butt.
Yeah.
It's a very average
You've got
butt.
A lot of noticeable things about you.
Thank you so
we
much.
We can't have everything, but now you do because you did squats.
Well, I'm working on it, but can you imagine? Like, if I had known that in high school, I would have cried.
Yeah.
Like, that's so sad.
It's mean. I don't know.
That's, it is mean.
Guys, do that.
I hope I never know anything people think about me.
You don't want to know?
No.
I know.
No, I don't want to know. I live in a fantasy world like Michael Scott.
I do not. I want to know every single thing that every person thinks about me. If I could have Mel Gibson powers and what women want, I would take those powers.
Don't you think you'd be destroyed by it?
No. The only time I've ever said Mel Gibson and I want something he has ever. Michael looked at me like, are you about to compliment Mel Gibson?
Where are you going with this?
But I don't think I'd be destroyed by it because I would be like... remember what Tiffany Haddish did when she left her phone in the casting office?
No.
Okay, Tiffany Haddish just came out a few months ago. When she was coming up in the industry, she would go and audition in a room, and then she would leave her person there recording on her phone what they would say because she wanted to find out why she wasn't booking.
Wow.
And she wanted to know what they were saying. And she said, now all these years later, too urban, not like all different things that were relatively racist. But she was like, I wanted to know those things because I wanted to know why I wasn't booking seriously. Why am I not booking? It's just helpful information to have. What can I do to book more? And she took that and she grew from it and learned what it was that she could control and what she couldn't control. Mm-hmm. So I think that I'm pretty like-minded in that way where I want to know, what do you think? And what of those things don't matter to me at all? And what of those things can I actually work on? And people aren't usually willing to say all those things out loud. So those are my thoughts on Mel Gibson. Guys, we've got a lot to talk about tonight. Definitely some controversial stuff going on. Controversial. That's a hard one for me today. Controversial stuff going on with Dennis Quaid. I think we are on I was going to say opposite side of the aisle, but... It feels like maybe we have more similar thoughts than I think. Definitely a weird engagement for him, though, that we will talk about. Also, Massachusetts, still being the strangest state in the country. We make weird rules, and then we try to move forward with them. We are trying to ban a word, and I'll talk about that when we get there. How proud I am of my home state. Selena Gomez, some new shade she's throwing towards that JB. Not to be confused with the other JB.
The Jonas Brothers.
Yeah.
Or JB the musician. Or a number of other JBs.
Yeah, the real true JB, Justin Bieber, that we'll be talking about. And of course, why do we have Lauren back here tonight? Well, number one, because we love her in general, mm-hmm. and we would have her every single night if she would be here.
Every night.
But also, she has her music video and EP dropping, Road to Glory. One of my, like, seriously favorite of your songs, but just in general, I love this song, and I've been listening to it for years, know every single word, like a true, I don't even know if it's a fan. I'm more of a stan. I'm more of a...
What is a stan?
Stalker fan. It's
oh,
fine.
I love that. I want a lot more of those.
Totally
Thank
fine.
You so much.
Started with Eminem, so, you know, you're in good company.
But Detroit.
Lauren, this is something that you've been working on for how long?
Over 4 years now. Yeah. It's been a long, painful, slow process, and it's finally happening. So it's
almost
pretty
like
awesome.
A road to glory.
Exactly. That's what the road to glory is about. It's about the painful, slow climb to become the person and artist you want to be.
Yeah, and we're definitely going to dive deep into that. But speaking of the road to glory, also just kind of artist lifestyle stuff today. I know a lot of you guys at home, a lot of our fans are people who want to be in the industry or artists in some way. Lauren, you always are talking about how anybody and everybody, no matter what position you're in, can be creative as well. So I think that it artists pertain to that. It doesn't have to be necessarily your main form of income or your profession, but even if it is your hobby or something that moves you, just talking about being supported as an artist. So let's get into it though with you, Lo, because this is something that I'm in awe of and have watched you from, I mean, more than 4 years that you've been working on becoming a musician. You've gone through so many different phases. And I think that people see somebody put out a music video and an EP and don't understand what went mm-hmm. into that, you know, how long that actually takes. And they don't know how to get started. I know that this wasn't exactly what you studied. It wasn't like you had all the tools. So for anybody out there who wants to do this, who wants to be a musician, what was your journey like? What were the steps to actually being able to put out your first music video?
Totally. So it's been, I mean, with that said, over, I think it's like a 6.5 year process. I wrote my first song when I was like late in my 23rd year of age. And I did my first show right after I turned 24. And if you told me when I was 24 that I wouldn't put out my first single till I was 30, I would have just asked you to knock me out. Because at that point, I already felt like my life was over. And it was so misguided. Like when we're in our early 20s, especially if you're like a passionate, creative person, I think you tend to be really dramatic and over the top. And because you feel the pressure of time ticking down on you, especially being a woman.
100%. I think that's a really relatable thing. I mean, raise your hand if you're in this room and you thought by this point you would have won some kind of Emmy, Oscar, Grammy, Jeff. I was looking at you too. Every one of our hands. I think that when you're, if you've had a dream of being an artist since you were a child, mm-hmm. you think like, okay, by the time I'm 21, right?
Yeah.
22, maybe.
Obviously.
25 at the latest. And then you start to realize what actually goes into that. So
right.
I think that you very quickly realized, actually the long,
it's a long and winding road, but that's beautiful because I needed to emotionally, mentally, musically mature in order to put it out the right way. So I started gigging. I just really like cut my teeth in live venues out here.
What does that mean? What does that look like? Are you calling? Are you showing up at people's doorsteps and saying, can I play here? Are you emailing? Is it even the same today that it was when you started 6 years ago, 7 years ago doing that?
I don't know 100% because I mostly get invited to gig around now. But when I started just doing open mics. And I would literally go to Yelp and Google. Like, I would Yelp and Google, and I would type in open mics, top open mics, and just find the ones in my area and hit as many as I could. And then from those open mics, I did one at a place called Pig and Whistle, which is on Hollywood Boulevard, like right in the armpit of Los Angeles. It's disgusting there. But it was, like, the best experience because from that open mic, you paid $6. You had to pay to play. But
so
they,
you pay, people then pay $6 to go. You pay $6
I paid $6 to like, put my two songs up. But from that show, I booked a live show there. And from that show, I was able to finally start making money. So we would split the door. So this guy, Mike, he was like this old Italian guy who'd been booking there forever, started booking me and my friend Jordan, who were playing together in a duo at that time called Lojo and the Truth. And so from that, one thing led to another. I had someone,
Lauren, Joe, Jordan, and the Truth.
And the Truth. Yeah, exactly. Very good.
Thank you so much. I'm a quick study guy.
You really are. So from that, I got some video footage. And then once I had some footage to send to places, then I started emailing. So after, like, I went back to my little Yelp routine and I did best live venues. And then I typed in Los Angeles. And so then I would just start targeting them one after another. If they didn't have an email, I would call the place and I would say, hey, who can I put my stuff out to? I'd love to play a show there. The first full-length live show I did actually, like Pig and Whistle wasn't the first full-length live show I did. That was like the first bar show. But the first full-length one I did was at Republic of Pie.
What's full-length? Over an hour?
I'd say half an hour or
more. Oh, half an hour mm-hmm. or more. And yeah. do you feel like this is something somebody could do not living in Los Angeles?
Absolutely.
So you could be in the middle of the country, in a different wherever you are, you can figure out where you could possibly play for yeah. anybody who would listen.
Yes.
Find someplace
that
to play.
That is what is so empowering about being a musician or even a comedian, that you can go do it anytime. You know, even if you want to, I mean, not comedian as much, but musician, even if you want to stand on a corner and sing, that's what I loved about it when I transitioned my focus to that, was that I could do it at any time. I didn't have to wait for someone to tell me, go for it. You know, I was more in control.
Okay. And then so you start being able to call the places, but then they're actually now calling you. Does that happen after?
That happened pretty quickly because we were bringing a lot of people to the venue. So if you don't bring a lot of people to the venues, they'll stop booking you as much because the door wants to make money. So, but for the first year, I was very aggressively going at it. And within the first year of writing, like within the first year of writing music, I had played House of Blues, The Viper Room, and Hard Rock Cafe. So I started off really high, which is why I think I had really high expectations as well. Because it was like, well, I guess this is just something I do now. And it seems like I'm in flow. But after that is when I kind of started hitting roadblocks. One, because the guy I was playing with didn't have the same goal as me. And that's something you got to be really, really careful of when you're entering any partnership, whether it's a relationship or a business partnership or a creative partnership. If you and the person don't have the same end goal and don't have the same work ethic, it's not going
to
work out.
Do you wish you had asked him that to start, or are you glad that you didn't because it got you where you are now?
Got me where I am. I never could have done it without him. I credit him to this day. Like, I could never have gone on this track without him, but you know, it's the thing Kevin says. The thing that you think is the worst thing to ever happen to you actually turns out to be the best. Because at that time, I thought that him leaving me was the worst thing that could ever possibly happen to me because I didn't have the guitar skill set that he had. But what actually ended up happening was I became a better songwriter. I became almost as good of a guitar player as he was because I empowered myself to do it. And I started playing on my own, so I didn't need to wait for anyone.
What did that look like? You took a bunch of guitar lessons?
Yeah.
Okay, so you're investing now into the fact that you don't have that guitar player. You don't feel like finding another one. Mm-hmm. You want it to just be you because you don't want that to happen again where somebody can leave you.
I wanted to find another one, but I tried this one guy. He was, like, super Christian, like, but, like, not, like...
Worst.
No, I love Christian people, but not like you, Michael.
You are Christian.
I am Christian, but not like you where you're not judgmental. Like, he didn't want to play with me because I had a song that, like, talked about, like, loving everyone, like, all different religions, and he thought that that was wrong and against his faith. So, like, I had a few roadblocks, and I feel like if you keep having roadblocks again and again, sometimes you have to take that as a sign that you need to go in a different direction. And since I did, and that was just one example, like, I tried, like, 3 or 4 different guitarists, and none of them worked out.
And when you talk about somebody not having the same end game as you or the same desire, goal, is that, like, you saying, I want to make this my life, I want this to be my career and my whole world, and they didn't feel the same way?
Yes.
Or are you talking something more nuanced than that?
I think both. I mean, for me, I was doing 90% of the work, and he was more so just showing up, and he would write with me and practice with me, but I was booking the shows, I was doing the publicity, I was, like, printing out the flyers, you know, all that stuff was falling on me, which I was fine with, but it just didn't seem like it was his passion. Like, he didn't want this as one of his main things. What he really wanted to do as time went on was do comedy and acting. And I realized, like, I didn't want to hold him back from that, but I also didn't want to keep dragging around dead weight with me.
Do you think that when you talk about not knowing, not thinking that you were going to wait this long to put out your song or your mm-hmm. music video, if you and him had put it out then, do you feel like you were ready for that?
No. I wasn't good. Like, I listened to videos of me singing even 4 or 5 years ago, and I'm like, oh, I sucked.
I think the same thing about some of my hosting skills, but I wonder, how do you guys feel we should be assessing ourselves? Because what if in 10 years from now, Lo, Steph, Michael, Jeff, we look back and we're like, wow, today we sucked. Because I think I'm pretty good right now. I'm sure you think you're pretty good. You think you're pretty good. You think you're pretty good. Jeff thinks he's pretty good on his non-self-deprecating days. I'll let you know, Jeff, you are great. But what if we're not? Like, I think I'm ready now, but I thought I was ready then.
Well, I think you're more ready now. The thing I said on the day I recorded my album, I was like, well, no one can say I'm not most improved. Like, as long as I keep getting that superlative, that's all I care about. And I hope I do look back 10 years from now and think, wow, I'm so much better now. I thought I was good then. I'm amazing now. And I hope that continues for my whole life.
Just for the people out there, I wonder, I've never been able to advise how somebody can know when they're ready.
I don't think that you're ever fully ready, but if you wait till you're fully ready, then you will never do anything. But I think you know the difference between anxiety over, I'm scared that I can't do this because you're living in fear and you're letting fear ride you, or the anxiety that comes from knowing that you're not really in the place where you can put your full self out there.
You're ready for tomorrow. Mm-hmm. But you might not be ready for a year from now.
The anxiety.
But if you keep having that attitude.
Who? Everybody?
Yeah, have that attitude. Like, be ready for tomorrow. Like, get better to be ready for tomorrow. You're not going to, you know, does that make sense?
Well, kind of, but not really, because if I look back to 10 years ago, Rox, you know, she's out here, she's 18, and if somebody had said to me, you're going to be the host of The Tonight Show, I would have been like, I'm ready for that, and I would have blown it. Because I was not ready for it. Mm-hmm. So
That's young arrogance, you know, because we don't know any better. You know better now, right?
I think so.
You do.
But I think if you'd asked me then, I would have been like, I know a lot.
But, like, let me give you an example. So when I worked at Sirius, like, that was my main priority because I really had to learn how to become a producer. Like, I needed to shift everything to that because it was a huge opportunity. I wanted to make sure all my energy was on that. So I kind of paused the project for, like, 2 years. I would dabble in it here and there.
When you say pause the project, what do you mean?
I mean, like, I didn't really work on the actual CD during the time I was there because...
So it actually started...
I started doing this, like, right before that opportunity came up. So summer 2015.
Got it.
Yeah, like late summer 2015.
So late summer 2015, you decide you are ready to put out an album.
I decided I was ready. And this amazing producer, Jeff Bova, who's a Grammy Award winner, like worked on Celine Dion's iconic album from 1999, like won a Grammy for it. He like put his belief in me and wanted to work with me. So I felt ready.
And you knew him from?
My guitar teacher, Jason, introduced me.
Your guitar teacher you had because... Your partner was better at guitar, and when he left, you needed to find a way to get better at guitar, mm-hmm. So you got the teacher.
Yeah.
Crazy.
It all aligns. But I wasn't ready then, and I'm so glad that that happened because I needed to get savvy. I needed to get better. Like, during that time, I took a ton of voice lessons. And anyway, so after that, I felt a lot more secure as a producer. I had this new job, and I started really delving into it. So a year ago, like... The album was ready to go out. Like, all the songs were done. I felt confident about it.
So you're no longer at Sirius.
This is, now we're like fast forwarding, cause this was the recording of the album and like the finalizing of it was happening in 2018, like late 2018. So fall 2018, I had everything done, but there was still something in me that felt unsettled. And it wasn't that feeling of like, ooh, I'm excited and kind of nervous. It was that feeling of something's wrong. But I was trying to ignore it because I'd been working on it for so long at this point. I thought, if it's not now, when? Like, I've already waited so many years. Like, what am I waiting for? I've known what I wanted to do since I was three. But there was
Icky in your gut?
It felt icky in my gut. It felt like, I don't know, the image that just came to my mind is like a crab crawling around in your stomach. Like,
so not butterflies, not but crab. Butterflies.
Crab.
Crab, not butterflies.
Scary crab. Okay. And I showed the song to this girl I knew who was a recording artist for Sony.
Somebody you trusted.
Someone I trusted. I knew she knew what she was talking about. And she gave me a note that the vocals weren't good enough, the production sounded dated, and lyrically, it wasn't strong enough. I gave it to another person who I was working with at the time who was coaching me, and she gave me the exact same notes unsolicited.
So you didn't say, somebody else thought this. Do you feel the same way?
No, I said nothing. I said, hey, what is your honest opinion of this song? And she's like, oh, I thought you were done with it. So I didn't say anything, but here's what I really think. And so after that, I had
Lauren, at that point, you've been at this for a really long time and somebody's telling you the vocals aren't strong enough.
Yeah.
I mean, going back to our What Women Want conversation at the earlier part of this, how does that not destroy you?
Because I always think I can be better. Like, that doesn't destroy me because they weren't saying your voice isn't good enough to sing this song. They're saying the vocals you recorded aren't good enough right now.
And did they know you as an artist?
The one lady knew me as an artist, the other one didn't, but she could hear the potential in my voice.
Got it.
It's different for someone to say, you suck.
Yeah.
But if someone says, this isn't good enough, try it again, that's a different situation.
Were you pissed at them? Were you happy with them?
Oh, I mean, I wasn't pissed at them at all. I was pissed that that was the situation because I wanted to release it. But
that wasn't the timing. So I, at that point, and I had this whole debacle with a music video director that I won't even get into because I was ready to do the music video last fall
for
as well.
For one of the songs.
Yeah, for the song Witch Hunt, which you probably remember, which doesn't exist anymore.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I mean, it's still like in the ether, but it's not going anywhere. This was a song I wrote about an experience I had, but it just, there are a bevy of reasons, which you've heard me just talk about, which was why it's not going anywhere.
Got it.
But anyway, that all happened, and I went back to the drawing board and like rewrote that song entirely. It's now a different song called Rise, which you've heard. Way better song.
I like it so much.
And we rewrote Road to Glory. I rewrote part of this other song called, what is it even? Like a Bomb. And redid the production on almost every single song. And now it's so much better. I can't even tell you. But again, like, did I want to do that? No. But did I know that we needed to do it in order to get to the music to the right place? Yeah.
I just can't imagine hearing that and then having the confidence in myself and the humility to go back to the drawing board.
I know. But, like, what else was I going to do?
Release the album?
No, because like
I'm not saying that's what you should do. I'm saying that that would have been your other option theoretically.
Right, but I'd already put that much time into it at this point. You know, why do it? Man, money. Why do it the wrong way when I could just wait a few more months and do it the right way?
I definitely want to keep talking about your journey, but for anybody who's listening, who's like, okay, but what does this woman even sound like? I do want them to hear because we have a sample of the song that's coming out. Lauren, do you know when it is dropping?
The song itself is going to drop on November 8th, and it's going to be on all music platforms. So wherever you get your music, it will be there. It's going out to like 30 platforms. I don't even know what some of them are. And then
Road to Glory.
Road to Glory is what it's called. My name is Lauren LaGrasso. I'm not 100% sure if the music video is going to drop on the same day, but there's a possibility. Just stay tuned.
Okay, so we have less than a minute of that I want you guys to check out right now. Jeff, if you could play that for us, because I was blown away.
Oh, can you restart it, Jeff? Thanks. Isn't paved, it isn't smooth. I've got a light inside me, even though the sun is too. I've been knocked off my feet, but I'm still crawling on my knees. I won't let go on the road to glory. Won't sell my soul on the road to glory. Won't let go on the road to glory. That's a TTS exclusive.
Dude, it's
insane.
What?
You see the world for the first time
as well?
No, I have gospel singers. The McCreary sisters are amazing.
Wait.
I know. Steph's face during that. When we switch, and I don't know anything about how to describe music, but when it's going, and then it was like, we go a little faster.
Change the tempo.
Yeah. Steph's face was like, it's so good.
That was so good.
Thank you.
Super awesome.
It just like, gave my eyeballs chills.
I love chili eyeballs.
What is that?
It's like when they're, no, it's not, but it's like my eyes are about to cry. And
when you listen to that, are you thinking just like, I'm so proud of myself or?
Yeah, because I mean, I actually wish, now knowing how this conversation went, I wish I would have given you also the original one. It's so much better.
It's so
like,
different.
Undeniably better.
Lauren, 1,000%. Because honestly, I do like the other version.
Yeah,
but
it's good.
I've also seen you play live so many times, so I have memories to associate it with. And, you know, I sing along. This was like a completely different rendition of it with the snaps and like the backgrounds, like you were talking about the gospel. It's so good.
Thank you. Yeah. You know what? Honestly, it was worth the wait. It's like, why would you marry a person who you know isn't right for you when you can just wait like a little bit longer and hold out and be with the right person?
What if you...
That's my metaphor.
But on that metaphor, I think a lot of people would say, because I'm scared I'll never find the right person. Were you scared you would never find the right song?
No, I wasn't. I'm scared of a lot of things, but I'm not scared of my ability to create. I'm still fearful of like, what if I'm never received in the way I want to be received? That is something I still hold a lot of anxiety and fear and some despair over.
With your music or?
With everything. Like, what if the world never sees me in the capacity I know I'm capable of?
Like, what if I never get to grow as big as I know I'm able to? But I'm not scared of my ability to create beautiful things. I know I can do that.
I want to go to the chat for a second. By the way, just so everybody knows, we are always live on Not Sam's YouTube every single Wednesday, 5 p.m. Pacific time. Past friend of the show, Christian Blatt. It's so great to have him in here right now supporting Lauren. And he says, I thought you were going to play a clip of Lauren. Why did I just hear an Adele song?
Oh, my God.
So excellent.
Also, Christian gave me 6 old cell phones for the music video show,
yeah.
Which really saved me because the ones from eBay, we had to buy a bunch of old cell phones as props. The ones from eBay that I bought just came in yesterday. So without Christian, I would have been screwed.
Do we need
you should return those.
I don't know if you can. That's to eBay.
Do we need either. To question what work Christian's doing that he has 6 disposable cell phones? Like, what businesses are you doing on the side now, Christian?
For sure. He's definitely doing some sketchy
lots
stuff.
Lots of burner phones.
Garth McMurray says, nice. Brandy says, love it, Lauren. You're getting love in here right
aww.
Now.
Thanks, Brandy.
Brandy even says better than her recap songs, which were really great.
Definitely so. Better than the recap songs. Well, the recap songs were really clever. You know, it's
they
like
were very clever.
It's fun to look back on something and still love everything. Sometimes I go through old Tomorrow Show and watch them, and I still think, wow, those were real clever.
I mean, you did them fast. This is for OG Tomorrow Show fans who are listen. What was that? 2 years ago
mm-hmm.
that yeah. were listening back then. I mean, Lauren used to do these recap songs that were. I don't know. I feel like in 30 minutes you would have everything completed from writing it to going to perform it to mm-hmm. being wrapped on what we just had talked about.
Those shot are wild. In a van.
And I just want to give Kevin a little bit of credit for that because
A lot of credit.
I mean, he was, first of all, the one with the idea. Second of all, during that time, like, I didn't have a lot of extra time, but the thing I loved about it was I knew no matter what, 2 days a week, I got to write a song. And he saw that in me, and he knew that that was an opportunity for me. And he's always made opportunities for all of us to be our full selves and our full creative selves.
Absolutely.
And I'm just so grateful for that because it really expanded me as a writer doing that every week.
I mean, it's interesting, too, because I think part of what you talked about was going over to Sirius and really figuring out how to be a producer. And that's Maria. Mm-hmm. And then also with Kevin, the ability to write songs. So definitely our admiral and our captain helping Lauren along her journey with all of this. So you said that the song is coming out then, but when is, and say it again, November
8th is the song.
And then when, you don't know when the music video is and when
are more
songs.
It might be the same
songs.
Day, but I might like, you know, leverage the release a little bit. So like do it on the 8th and then a few weeks later release the video so people have something to look forward to. But I do have some events that weekend. So on the 8th, I'm releasing my song. On November 9th, I'm speaking as a keynote speaker at this event called the Pretty Thing Tour about creativity. And I'm doing a speech on the same title as my podcast, Unleash Your Inner Creative. And then on Monday, November 11th, which I think would have been my grandparents' like 60-something anniversary, I'm going to be doing my single release show at Bar Lubitsch at 8:30.
Damn low.
Yeah.
It's like happening.
It's happening.
I mean, I don't even know how to phrase it other than that.
Yeah.
In my Valley Girl. It's like happening.
No, but
it
does feel like
it feels
that.
Like it's totally happening.
It feels like things are finally starting to key in. And, you know, when we were doing the music video together, I think I told you this. Roxy was you were so key on that day. Just having you there emotionally, like, you're just so... You're so good at film, like all things film. You just get it. You get every aspect of it. And you kept me so calm that day. You kept me encouraged. You helped me with my acting so much.
You're a very talented actress, Lauren. It took really, like, that was not an easy, I don't want to give away what we filmed, but that was not an easy thing to film.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, you were badass.
I couldn't tell how it was coming off because
it looked so good.
I was so pissed at certain points because the lights kept going out, which was like,
drop the video.
Well, I thought that
want to see it now.
It's insane, but I thought that was one of the crazy parts of the journey, Lauren, because you've done everything you can to, you know, this is like a legit production.
Mm-hmm.
She has rented out this massive studio, like the whole thing. She's hired all of her people. She's got her hair and makeup person and her director and who's producing, and she's got her camera team, and it's a whole production. And then that day on set, we had like 8 power outages.
It was a lot.
And wow. And time is money in these cases. And Lauren has to be working. She's got to sing over and over. And if you listen to the rest of the song, when it comes out, those are
hard vocals. I mean, that is not an easy song to sing, and she is going all out, and she's performing, and now we have power outages that she's trying to deal with.
Yeah, and the guy running the studio is a jerk.
He was not my favorite Carlos. Person. No, for sure not. I had a few words with Carlos myself. He went for lunch during the shoot and decided that we could just figure it out ourselves.
Yeah, it was a completely dark studio.
That's really professional.
Yeah, it was really great. Yeah. But you did it.
Yeah, and you helped me through it. And, I mean, to the point where, Roxy, you're such a star, but she literally, there's a scene where we have blue paint used, and it was on me, and so it got under my nails. And she was literally cleaning under my nails.
I said,
like, she cleaned under my nails so that my hands could be okay for the next shot, because my hands were going to be featured in the next shot.
She had the blue paint.
But like, that's what a friend she is, and what an amazing person she is. Like, no ego whatsoever.
Well, 100% for very selfish reasons. When Lauren gets really famous, I can say cleaned under her nails. So there's all of the ego. But Lauren, I'm just, in all seriousness, so impressed and so proud of you. And I can't wait for the world to hear your music.
Thank you. That makes me want
to
cry.
And to see the music video, which, I'm excited to see my arm very heavily featured in it, guys.
So. I can't wait either, and I just appreciate you all supporting me. Like, this is the most meaningful thing I've ever done in my career, so.
Oh my gosh, you so make me
cry. Oh, Lauren!
But actually, Lo, that's kind of what I wanted to talk about in terms of supporting people in this industry, because I think you're crying right now in a way that anybody who's not an artist probably doesn't really understand, because this is your job, right? Yeah. You're an artist, so this is your job, and you're doing your job, so you went to work that day, and there was a power outage, and whatever. Like, that's how a lot of my friends from home really think about this. My friends who, nothing that wrong with this at all, but work at banks, or, you know, they go to work, they do their job, and they come home. And I think that it, when you are an artist for your living, you're also an artist for your life.
Yeah, you can't separate the two.
Mm-hmm. Or at least I'm not able to.
I can't.
I'm really not able to. I mean,
yeah, it's not like I go to work. I am working.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. That's the difference.
Or I am work. I don't think that's healthy, but a lot of times that can get mixed up in the old noggin.
But I think what can be really frustrating is that we all have friends. None of us are from here. Mm-hmm. Steph's the closest, but still definitely not from here. Did not grow up like hardcore in this industry. And we all have friends who don't understand at all why we take it so seriously or how to support us as artists. I had a situation that happened months ago. It must have been in July. You guys know that I had that movie come out, Madness in the Method, the J. Muse movie. And I have two scenes in it, like very brief. I mean, maybe I'm on screen for 30 seconds in the entire thing.
It's a huge deal.
But it's the first time in a movie.
And this is your dream. Like, you've wanted it since you were a baby.
Since I could speak, literally, and nothing against anybody who figures out what they want to do later in life. That's totally fine as well.
No, that's all. Honestly, it's almost better, because to know what you want to do from a young age and not be able to reach it can be very torturous sometimes.
I've never, ever been able to verbalize and have wanted to do something else. Since the time I could speak, this is what I wanted to do. So, it was my first time I was in a movie. It was all across the country, and it was here in Los Angeles at Universal City Walk. And so for the movie, Steph, who had already gone to see the movie with me when we were at Comic-Con, because they did a Comic-Con show, was coming with me again, which was really, really kind of her.
It was. I mean, like, we know we need to do those stuff. Like, that fuels me as a friend.
But it was also, like, you're working and all those things. But she was like, yeah, obviously, I'm going to be there. And
it's a huge deal.
My best friend from growing up, from childhood, and we went to high school together. Then we went to college together, which is weird because, like, we're from Boston. So high school there, college at USC. It's crazy. And then we lived together for 6 years. So, like, my ride or die person was out here. She lives in New York now, and she was out here for that. And she went out and got too drunk to show up and didn't come to the screening. And then afterwards did not come to the, to celebrate with us afterwards. We were going to, like, grab champagne, essentially, because I was so excited about it. And it ruined my night. I was I mean, Steph knows, I was crushed. Like, I could not get my head out of the fact, and that's a me problem. I needed to figure out a way to put that aside. But, like, I was crushed.
I know, but it was your big moment, and you didn't need to have anything to distract you from the fact that it was the biggest moment of your life, like, in this career so far.
Which, like, that feeling of, I know this should be the best day, but I'm so upset right now. And Steph is doing an amazing job trying to have me kick it, trying to have me kick it. But, so this is, again, my closest friend. And she, that was in July. It is October, and we finally reconciled this week because we don't live in the same city. And it's really awkward to have these conversations over the phone. And we've been playing phone tag, and finally she called me. And I also found out she's having some really horrible health issues. I found that out through a mutual friend. So I had texted her like a month ago, and I was like, hey, I know we're not on great terms, but like, here for you if you need anything. So there was a lot of pressure to get this situation resolved. So finally she called me this week, and I was like, and the first thing she said to me was, I don't understand why you're this upset with me. I don't understand. Can you please explain it to me? Because I don't get why it was one movie. It was one night that I don't get why you're upset. And I was like, what? Thinking to myself this whole time that she got it, but she didn't get it, which was the weird.
Was that better or worse for you?
I don't know. Different. Mm. It was just different than what I had assumed, because if I had done that to somebody, I would have gotten it. But I'm an artist. And she was like, it was just a movie. It was just one night. I'll go see you in something else. Like, and I said to her, I don't feel supported by you as an artist, which means I don't feel supported by you as a person, because that is not what I do. It's who I am. And I understand that you are, you know, you just got married and you guys are working on being parents and having like that life. And I've flown across the country 1,000 times for every single one of these things. When you got engaged and when you had your bachelorette party, yes, and your wedding. And I am super duper single and not planning on doing those things anytime soon. And I'm in a movie and I've worked over 25 years on this, and it's my first one ever, and you were in town. Mm-hmm. This is my baby.
Yes.
So
this is your wedding.
So I don't know how to describe it better than that, but like, you missed my wedding, and you because you were casually getting too drunk, not because you got a car accident, not because something happened, because you decided to go day drinking that day on the day you knew that I was having my baby. And like, she was like, I don't think that's fair at all. I think it's the equivalent of me having a class presentation.
Oh, no.
Wait, mm-mm. What?
And I was like, but the thing is, this is where I wasn't getting mad, because she doesn't get it. She doesn't get it.
She hasn't lived the life.
But a class presentation, okay.
Work. It's work. Showing off. She's a teacher. I gotta say,
like, even my friends back home who really, like, aren't in the arts at all still get things like, yeah, that.
All of them?
Pretty much.
Really?
Yeah, a like, movie? There are every single music show I do back home. Like, even if it's, like, they don't get it to the level. Like, I have this one friend who's very, like, into her marriage and into her baby right now, which is beautiful. But, like, when she was going through pain with that, like, she expected me to fully understand it. But when I was going through something really, really painful in the industry, she didn't get it at all. At she all. Didn't reach out at all. She just, like, I felt like I was left to die.
So there's various levels, yeah, of it, for sure.
So there's definitely various levels. But for her to say it's like a presentation is just weird.
So what I said to her was, it is not, and that's fact.
Yes.
I can't, unless you can come to terms with that, this is not an agree to disagree. It is not the same, and I need that to be our baseline.
It's a deep misunderstanding of who you are as a human being.
Right, and she was like, okay, I'm really, really sorry I didn't show up. I really did not know. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, that sucks. Don't do it again. Because what I said to her, I don't know what to do, because either we move forward or we don't, and you've been my best friend for 2 decades. So, like, this shows such a lack of understanding who I am as a human being for you to think that it's like a class presentation. But if you can promise to never feel like that in the future, then I
and not fake it. Like she has to actually feel get that it. Way.
But how do you like gauge that?
I don't know. I want to force her and I want to sit her down. And I want to explain everything you've gone through. Like that's what I want to do, a class presentation on Roxy Schreier's trek in Hollywood, so that she understands what the fuck was inside of that one thing. Like two hour
lines
thing.
That I have.
Yeah.
I don't know though, Rox, because with everybody, I don't think that people can really understand the plight and struggle and journey of an artist. But I do think in every single position, we can understand the big moments. For example, my friends who finished law school went through a really hard time doing the LSAT, passing the bar, extremely rigorous things. If I knew they had their first trial, I wouldn't be in court, but I would be right there after. Like, with a bottle of wine, because I would understand that. That's, a movie we all go to see. These are massive events.
That's true, but she said you had a line. Which, like, you know, if you're going to trial... Like, you're the I think she wasn't understanding that it was the same thing as to me, I was starring in the movie. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I was the movie, which is so obviously not what it is. But because it's my first, it felt huge. But she was like, I mean, you kept saying you had one line, so I didn't think it was a big deal.
I think she's thinking that this is a normal thing and that you have so many bigger things ahead to also celebrate and not realizing, like, you need to celebrate almost, like, every single major achievement. Like, this is a major achievement to celebrate. I think she's realizing there are probably other major celebrations ahead, but not realizing that this is also one of them.
Jeff, my fellow artist in the booth, how are you feeling? Supported by all of your people at home?
You know, I am lucky that most of the people I'm close to in my life are very supportive. I'm still trying to wrestle with... It's funny, with things that require empathy like this, my knee-jerk, if someone tells me something, is just to say, okay, and not push back and say, I think the way you feel is wrong. I would have had a...
But she was saying the way Roxy felt was wrong.
That's what I'm saying.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I think I would have... I admire you for getting on board with her adjustment of thinking as quickly as you did, because I feel like I would have been like, well... I view it this way, and you're kind of invalidating the way that I feel.
Well, we were starting to fight. And it, what am I going to do with that? Like, I thought to myself, but either we're going to continue being friends or not, because that's how important this is to me. And I'm not going to not be her friend. So I hope that she gets it. And she's saying she does and that she didn't understand. So I just have to kind of give her the benefit of the doubt, honestly, on this one.
Yeah.
But it's been happening to me a lot recently. Like, and I think Lauren, for you too, and I don't know, maybe you guys as well, the more success I'm finding, the less supported I feel. And I don't know exactly what that is, but it's like, I wasn't expecting my friends from home to watch me on my first AfterBuzz TV after shows talking about, Jersey Shore, right? Because they don't watch Jersey Shore, so I'm not expecting them to. But I guess maybe I'm feeling less supported because now I'm doing things that I feel like are more up their alley. Like, it's a movie. Everybody.
And also, it's more in line with what you've wanted since you were a small child.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think, though, because they don't understand the industry, any time someone's on camera, and now you've been on camera for 10 years, it just becomes normal. So,
like, that's what she does every day.
So you're not finding necessarily less support. I think the support's just more silent because they're like, she's doing her thing.
Well, my supportive people, my people out here are amazing. Like, everybody in this room, including the booth and the people at AfterBuzz and the friends that I've made that are out here. I mean, I couldn't possibly be receiving more love. And I hope that you guys all feel that way, too. It's the way that I grew up that's... I feel like having a hard time supporting my life choices.
Do you think that they feel you're outgrowing them and that they can't relate it? It's like, why? She probably has enough other people big out there now that she's maybe outgrowing my need of support in this area.
I don't think so.
I think to a certain extent, you have to be an artist to understand, like, the pain of the journey. One of the most challenging and frustrating things I find with someone who has creative compulsions is the inability to let go and relax, because I feel like any time I'm not spending is wasted time. Like, yeah. I should be using every single second of my time to work on this project or that thing. And it's an itch that you just can't scratch. And I think I can connect to creative people in that way because I understand both the joy and exhilaration of being creative, but also kind of the anxiety and that nagging bug that just won't let you sit still. So that's, I think, like, helps me understand the plight of creative people, and people who aren't like that, maybe they don't get it.
I wonder if there are, because obviously we're all in our own bubbles as humans, that happens. But, like, I wonder if there are other paths that are feel the same way.
I think you can, like, that's the point of my podcast, is that you can pursue any path like an artist. It just, it's a different approach. Like, my friends who really understand what I'm going through, one of them is a lawyer, and she approaches her job as a lawyer the same way I approach my career. She approaches it in a very artful and creative way. So I think
all consuming. Really cares.
My parents are the same.
Exactly. So I think that it just depends on your filter that you put on your life. It's not necessarily like the creative path, like as we know it, but are you putting creativity or like passion as a filter for your whole life?
But sometimes I envy the people who don't have that thing. Like,
yeah.
I'm like, Kevin talks about civilians is the term he uses.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm like, sometimes
their life
that
does sound like fun.
Wonderful. I'm like, just punching the clock, making enough money to take great vacations, and like not stressing or feeling burdened by that thing you just can't
but
scratch.
Think of all the passion that they're missing out on. I think of that too. Like, think of there's so much to life. You know, life is really such an honor and a blessing that there's so many different pieces of it. And if you don't dig into everything, like the beauty and the pain, are you really alive?
I don't know. I think that somebody who doesn't would feel maybe yes. Like, I something that we'll talk about actually after this is that I'm incapable of not, like, feeling 100%. Anything that I feel 100%. It's very rare that I'm, like, a little sad. Like, when I'm sad, I'm, like,
distraught.
Like, on the floor, crying, crushed. And when I'm happy, everybody in the room knows I am happy. Like, I'm very not good at kind of feeling anything.
I'm the same way. My mom wouldn't let me watch the news when I was younger because I'd just, like, start crying in a corner.
Well, I mean, it's a good thing in terms of I think you develop an empathy that other people do not have. But it's a bad thing because everything affects me. Everything. Everything affects me. And that, I don't know whether that's a self-centered way of looking at things or not.
You're an empath, probably.
Would you say you are as well?
Yes, but I think I'm learning more how to be more of a thermostat than a thermometer. I heard someone use that once, and I thought it was very good. So instead of taking on the energy of the room, you kind of set the energy of the room for yourself. But I'm still not great at it. Really not. Really, because I think, too, something I'm actually realizing about myself is I'm a little codependent. And a hallmark of codependency is that you feel responsible for everybody else's emotional state.
Oh my
and
God.
You take on their emotional state. And so that's something I definitely do, but I'm actively trying to stop that.
Why do you think you do that? Do you think it's a nurture? What?
I love my parents. They're the best people in the world, as you know, but yes. I felt very responsible for emotionally caregiving for both of them as a child. So I think that's where it comes from.
Do you, either of you guys have that?
I don't know where my I like want everyone to feel good.
So
all
you can
the time.
Relate to
I can relate to that feeling where I let people's energy affect me. I've been working on it for I mean my emotions and the way I feel things I've been working on for over 10 years now. It probably came from me being the one of the family who didn't get in trouble and I wanted to be like
Are you
pleaser.
The oldest?
No, I'm kind of middle. I'm a twin.
Okay.
It's probably tied to being creative too, because as a creative person, that's what you do. You produce, you make things, you create to make people happy.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, I think there's certain times in your life when you feel like you're telling your own story, you're creating your own journey. And if the characters in your life aren't vibing with the story you're telling, it's really tough.
But it's interesting though, because I less relate to what you guys are talking about. I don't necessarily feel responsible for other people's emotions.
Mm.
I'm incredibly emotional.
Yeah.
So,
I feel responsible for that.
Yeah. It's definitely not your fault. But that's interesting. Is there a word for it?
I think mine's different than yours. I'm a people pleaser. So in a sense, I'm responsible that I want them to feel good when they're around me. But if they feel bad, I don't feel like I am responsible for that.
I feel both things.
Okay, that sucks.
Yeah, it does.
That's tough.
Michael's like, I relate to none of this. I feel no responsibility.
I feel nothing. I'm just really tall. Next question.
Well, okay.
Air is different up here.
Speaking of the things that I feel incredibly, incredibly emotional about, before we get to news, this is a news story, but I'm going to say it now so that we don't have the background music there because not for this one. I legitimately did not sleep last night. Part of like what I was talking about before, taking on things that have legitimately nothing to do with me, but I feel like I am sometimes one with the earth. And so anything that happens on the earth has to affects me in that kind of way. I've been following this story for 10 days now. A little three-year-old girl went missing in Alabama 10 days ago. She goes by the name of Cupcake, which is just the most adorable nickname, Camille McKinney. And she was found dead in a dumpster last night. I read it on right before I went to sleep because I've been following the story. I've been checking in every day about her. She was kidnapped from a birthday party, and they had a vigil for her tonight. And last night when I was up all night, I was crying and couldn't exactly figure out what to do, because there is nothing to do, right? So I think that what I decided after my hours and hours was that anytime something like this happens, and unfortunately that is far too often, because there have been so many nights where I've spent up all night, every shooting that's happening in the country, and natural disasters or things like this where I just feel so, so helpless, I'm going to pick one thing that I can do, one really good thing that I can do, and in my head, dedicate that thing to Cupcake. So that's what I'm going to try to do for all of these things. And because I couldn't figure out what I could do. And I just feel like there is something in the universe where if you put some good out, it has to do good. If we put good out, it has to balance in some way. And something as horrific as this, I'm going to pick one thing this week. I haven't figured out what it is yet. And just try to do something really, really great for somebody else or for something. And I'll keep you guys posted for next week. And in my mind, I'll just think that was for Cupcake. So anybody else who struggles with taking on these things and just feeling so emotionally gutted that you can't even function in your day, I am hoping that you would like to do that with me at home or whoever it is.
Rox, I do something a little bit similar to that because, like I was saying, when I was younger, I would just get so overwhelmed by the news and different things happening across the globe, but not really being able to do anything, which I think is part of the reason we're each trying to be in the positions we are so we can bring attention to these types
get
of things.
Get more powerful, bring visibility, money, time, all of that.
Yeah. So until then, what I started doing, I love that idea, I want to tack that on, is that I, like, with the family separation, what I could do, I can leave LA because I work every day, all day, but I could donate to people on the ground working. Or if you can't donate, then it's like, try to find one way you can support that cause, whether it be time if you don't have money or money if you don't have time and you can spare some few dollars.
For something like this, that's what I was thinking, Steph, but I was like, I don't even know what the cause is. I mean, I don't think that there is even, and correct me if I'm wrong, but a charity against abducting, sexually assaulting, murdering, and putting somebody in a dumpster. Like, I can't even think about
a three-year-old.
The most beautiful little girl I've ever seen in my entire life with the biggest smile that lit up every single photo in a room. So when I can't think of a direct correlation, I still want to do just anything. Something.
Well, we talked about this too, Brooks, before, and I said people underestimate the power of one good deed. You know, look at the billions of people that we have on the earth, and like it's like, oh, what is my one good deed going to do? Well, your one good deed might inspire someone else or might help someone else and encourage them. And imagine if everyone on the earth did one good deed a week, that would be 8 billion good deeds done every single week.
Yeah.
And so there is a power to that. And I was thinking of this today because I saw, to talk about more on that, like I saw a friend post something today. It was like, oh, I went in an audition. I might not get it, but I'm going to keep doing this like crazy this crazy train that we're all on of trying to fight. And I said, and I came up with, you know, I'm big on my quotes. And I literally wrote down the quote and I said,
Michael is class quotes. Very big on his
I
quotes.
I said, if you give something everything himself. You have and don't succeed, but inspire someone in the process, you have not failed.
Yes, I agree.
That's agree beautiful. With that too. I agree with that too. Yeah. I mean, I can't believe we live on a planet where somebody like this is the same species as us. So we just need to like overtake them.
Mm-hmm.
With love yeah. and good yep. shit, because I don't know what else to do.
Yeah. I think, too, just by bringing visibility to it, like you have, like, unfortunately, because of the way our news works, I mean, and you were talking about this earlier with the other stories that have come about, but I didn't even hear about the story until I saw you tweet about it, and then I went and Googled it and learned more.
Yeah, you know, I got crap from one person about I put the hashtag #RIPCupcake, and they were like...
So people can find it.
That's why I did it, because that's how a lot of people get their news, including mm-hmm. myself.
Yeah,
I'll go
same.
And then I go and research more, but they were like, that seems very trivial, and I understand what they're saying, but mm-hmm. I wanted to bring attention to this because... It's been 10 days, and I randomly read about it 10 days ago. I don't even know how I found it, and I don't know anybody who's following this story. And even when I today woke up, not woke up, got out of bed because I didn't sleep, there's not a person I talked to today who had heard about this. And yes, it was on Twitter, but
I didn't hear about it, and this is totally up my alley of what I'm always looking into.
Yeah.
And I do think... I can't say directly, but Cupcake happens to be a beautiful black little girl, and there's oftentimes issues with our news cycle and the way we report on things in America where black women in particular are oftentimes forgotten about. Like, someone just sent me a case from South Carolina. A DJ has reportedly been sex trafficking victims, 15 to 16 year olds, over, and he's bragged about having sex with 600 underage black women. So there's like this hypersexuality, hyper violence against black girls and women in particular, and I think that visibility is so important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, do what you can. In a situation where you can do nothing, just try anything. Like, I'm willing at this point to try anything. Tackling things from all angles. Visibility, trying to put good into the world, educating myself, donating time, donating money, whatever the fuck it takes. We have to extinct this species. This species of person that is not human.
They're not human. No.
And I don't know, because obviously they have not been tried, but they have been arrested, and it's mm-hmm. all signs point to it's a man and a woman.
Yeah, that certainly is something to be able to point out of. I'm not even going to say their names. A 39-year-old man and a 29-year-old woman are planning to be charged with capital murder and kidnapping. So there are two people in custody. They are held on a several $100,000 bond. So the good news is they are not getting out.
He was already charged having child pornography, yes. And she was already charged for kidnapping before.
It is Domestic Violence Awareness Month, so I do want to bring up a point that my mom was just talking about this, because she works in this department a lot, that... The police departments and the way we look at facts of people and criminal records is so telling. People who are domestic violence abusers or child pornography, oftentimes there's a massive percentage that connects them with grotesque murders, rapes, and things of this nature. So
Because you're not human.
Yeah, there's certain things that need to be, and we're like criminalizing marijuana, but like you can get off on that. Like, we need to shift the system.
And they say it with when you are somebody who is, I don't even know how to phrase this, into children.
If you're a child molester.
Pedophile. If you're a pedophile, there is no curing that.
Mm-hmm.
You can stop it, but there's no, you're never not a pedophile.
Like, I'm very like hippie zen, but this is the one place where I think that people who do that should have their hands and their legs and their genitals chopped off.
Yeah.
Because I think that that's what it deserves.
Yeah.
The one thing that I said to Michael, the only thing that I feel that the parents at least are not going to spend the rest of their lives looking. At least mm-hmm. the child's body was found, because I'm sure they would have spent the rest of 100%. Their lives looking.
Of course.
That's the worst thing about the missing person is the hope.
The hope, which is awful. But anyway, that's not usually where this show goes, but I just wanted to try to brainstorm together about ways that we can try to put light in the world. And so we do have some lighter news stories ahead that we will... that we will dive into. Michael, what do you got for us?
Yeah, well, we'll talk, you know, about relationships. Dennis Quaid and his new kid. Oh, wait, no, that's Dennis Quaid and his new fiance.
He's been working on that one the whole time. How many different times did you write that down?
59 years difference between him and her. So Quaid, who's 65, this will be his fourth marriage. He is now engaged to Laura Savoy, who is 26. I don't want to hate on him too much. You know, we try to encourage love. But certainly when you're 65 and she's 26 and it's your fourth marriage, they got engaged in Hawaii. Certainly quite the reaction to people on social media, including Elaine Hendricks, who you might know as his original significant other in The Parent Trap, the younger girl that he was dating.
Meredith Blake.
And she had the ultimate clapback on Twitter saying, quote, "Watch out for those twins." A reference to the movie, and hilarious.
That's epic.
And several things. A, thoughts on the relationship. B, when you're 65, or you're like, are you just like, I don't care what people think. I'm going to do what makes me happy. What are we thinking?
Dennis Quaid always thinks that.
Yeah, so Lo, what's going on?
I have a grudge against Dennis Quaid for a couple of different reasons. One is actually a Not Sam thing. So they were going to have him on his show. I was listening as a fan to the Jim and Sam show. And they were going to have him on the show. But at the time...
When is this?
This was like years ago. But I've held it against him ever since.
Ooh.
So they were going to have him on a show. But they had a porn star on the show. And he refused to come on the show because the porn star was sitting in as like a guest that day. And I just thought that was such a jerk thing to do. Like, it doesn't reflect on you. You're just going to be another guest on the show.
But also, Dennis Quaid?
Yeah, he refused because Mary Jane was going to be on. So I've always held that against him. And then I've got a friend who was a waitress. She's an actress and was waiting tables to pursue her passion. And he was a complete jerk to her, like, basically tripped her, like, accidentally, but just acted like a monster, screamed at her. And so I think he's an asshole, and I think anything he does stems from that. So that's why I think he's an asshole for this.
Damn.
Drop the mic.
Anybody else have any Dennis Quaid stories?
No.
I've had zero interaction with him. Or anybody who's interacting.
I haven't had real life interaction. I've just heard enough stories.
Yeah, but those are stories. I have no Dennis Quaid stories. I know that his son, Jack Quaid, is great, amazing. On The Boys.
I love that show. No, I love, and Jack Quaid is a very wonderful young man.
Really?
We had him on the Serious show back in the day. He's like, couldn't be nicer.
Hmm.
But I don't like his father.
He's great in those insurance commercials.
Jack Quaid?
Is that him?
Dennis Quaid, insurance.
Oh, Dennis Quaid.
Oh, yeah.
We're back to old Den.
I will say, the one I have is I co-host a show on Popcorn Talk, sister network to AfterBuzz TV, hosted by Ileana Douglas, who is regular recurring on this season of Goliath,
which
Dennis Quaid is a star, and she really likes working with him, I know. She says he and Billy Bob are great to at least be on set with, so he's a consummate professional.
But I will say, maybe that's him being smart, because she like knows everybody. And what's he going to do?
Right.
He's clearly career savvy enough that he's been able to maintain working all this time.
I think you can tell a lot from how somebody treats wait staff.
Yeah, I agree with that.
That's like a deal, like how you wouldn't date a vegetarian if I ever was at a dinner table and someone was rude to the staff.
Yeah. Because it tells you something about how they feel about someone who they perceive to be less than.
Yeah.
And if we don't treat everybody with kindness...
then get off. Yeah, we're done with you
straight
guys.
Straight up.
You know, obviously I have opinions on this one. For anybody who doesn't know, if you guys are a regular listener of The Tomorrow Show, you do know this. But if you are new to the show and have joined because you're a massive Lauren LeGrasso stan like I am, Dennis Quaid marrying or being engaged to a 26-year-old is very true to home. My father is 63 and his girlfriend is 25. So that's about the same age difference. This is his third girlfriend that he's had who's under 30 since the passing of my mom, who was his age. And I truly, truly, not a front, don't care.
truly, truly don't give a shit. Care about so many other things. And like I told you guys, when I feel something, I feel it 100%. I 100% do not care that he is the age that he is and she is the age that she is. And I do not care that Dennis Quaid is 65 and this girl's 26. If he's a dick, he's a dick. And I care about that part of the story. But I just feel like everybody's in their own boat, you know, like specifically for my dad. He likes saving people. With my mom, you know, he was unable to do so. He's trying to help younger people. Like, he knows he's never going to be with somebody like my mom again, so he's going with the exact opposite. Do what you got to do to wake up in the fucking morning, whatever that takes. So I really don't care about these age difference things.
Yeah.
If you're treating somebody well, and they're, again, and they're of age, you have to be, like, of age.
How would it be? So here's a question. Here's a different way to look at it, as all of us are similarly in that age. What would we do if a friend of ours just got engaged to a 65-year-old?
I would have to assess the relationship. I agree with a lot of what Rock said. I don't care, whatever floats your boat. If you're, it's a healthy relationship and there's no like abuse going on, whatever. But I do think that there is always a reason why. Like,
no, there's a why. Yeah.
There's
a
why for your dad. There's clearly a why for him. It's not like necessarily the norm because there's a why.
And yeah, a lot of people ask me, you know, why is this girl with your dad or why is he with her? And I think that there is totally always a reason. One could be money, of course. Another can be stability.
Mm-hmm. She's getting her PhD. Knowledge. I will say that. This is not a girl who's just regular person. I think at USC, I think?
Austin. University of Texas.
That's right. Texas, Austin.
I think whatever to that part. Who gives a shit? But totally, I would have to assess the situation because most of my friends would not work for them because most of my friends would like to have children. They would like to be in very long-term relationship. You know, like when I talk to my dad's girlfriend, she's like, I do not ever want kids. I'm okay being, like, she's obviously going to be, after him, she's going to have life. I mean, not 100% if something else happened, but, like, she's 40 years younger than he is. She probably will live a life after him. And she's like, and I'm okay with that, either being alone or finding somebody else. Like, if that was how my friend felt, Michael, then I would be fine with it. But you need to be honest with yourself. Are you legitimately okay not having children? Are you legitimately okay ending up alone when you're in your 60s? Like, you need to assess those things. I personally would not date somebody that old because I have watched my dad live his life without my mom, and I don't ever want to live decades without a partner.
Yeah.
And you have a better shot of not doing that if you marry somebody closer to your age.
And it just, I couldn't do it because it would make me think of my dad. And I don't want to think of my dad when I'm thinking of the person I'm supposed to have sex with.
Fair.
Yeah.
I would hope that's how you felt about that.
It's so to the person what floats your boat. I could not, I have an age limit where I just feel like we just wouldn't connect.
What's the age limit?
Like late 30s.
Yeah, I think 10 years either way.
Yeah. Well, for me, not 10 years younger. I don't think
not at this point.
No, but when I'm older,
I would do 10 years younger.
Yeah, me too. But at this point, I mean, if 20
years old.
If you're 18.
16.
Yeah, okay, yours is illegal.
Yeah,
ours
you can't do
ours
that.
Is legal, but still not
still
into
not
it.
Ideal.
Yeah, no.
Mine's like, you got your license, babe?
Yeah.
Disgusting.
And I also think, like, different people are looking for different things at different points in their life, so whether that's like a romantic relationship, a stable relationship, an intimate relationship, all those things can be completely different at different stages. If Dennis Quaid's a dick, then I hope this doesn't work out. But if that's not the case, then I'm fine.
I mean,
with
maybe
him.
Dicks can be reformed. This was years ago, so maybe
kind
he's a nice guy now. Maybe
kind
you
of
know,
doubt at 65.
Savoy's
made
him
nice. I want that
nice.
To be the title of my book.
He was
maybe
just in,
dicks can be reformed.
He was just in the Christian movie.
See,
what
maybe
is,
he found God.
Oh no,
I bet he did.
Because being in a Christian movie makes you a good person.
Exactly
it,
what it is.
It might. In Dennis Quaid's case, it really might have.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, Mel Gibson.
Well, Mel Gibson
is Roxy's favorite person.
We're just thinking of him again.
Just thinking about how not all Christians are good people.
Definitely not.
Mm. What about people from Massachusetts as we move into our next story? All good people, or what are your thoughts, Rox?
Bitches.
No, certainly, Kevin
well,
and I always say.
You better get that word in now, Step, because people in Massachusetts... now trying to ban the B word. And surprisingly, I think this might be the most shocking thing of all, it's from a Democrat who is trying to ban the B word.
I'm not shocked by that at all. It would be weird if it was from a Republican.
I feel like a Republican would be like a moral person of like, no, we need to condemn that word.
But I tell my wife it at night.
I hear Michael's point. I think typically isn't the left.
No, the right is laissez-faire except when it comes to regulating women's bodies.
Yeah, I guess that's, just in theory, a conservative would not want restriction of free speech.
Was that South Carolina that did that today? Did you see
No, I didn't see it.
Took away.
So, according to this new bill, penalties would be similar to those outlined in terms of, like, you'd either get a $150 or $200 fine or jail time of up to 6 months if you violate. Now, there is a clarification. It is a person who uses the B word directed at another person to accost, annoy, degrade, or demean them, which I don't really know how you enforce that. Oh, no, I meant it in a joking way. Rox from Massachusetts.
Bitch, please.
Home state. Yeah,
we've been doing some weird shit recently. I don't know if you guys saw this, but for 4 months we banned vaping. You cannot purchase any vaping products in Massachusetts for 4 months. It just happened overnight.
Is vaping really as bad as they say?
Oh my God. I'm going to like sock him. The point is, we don't know. So yes is not even the argument. The point is we don't know the long-term effects. That's the argument, which I agree with. I agree with that with Xanax. I agree with that Adderall. I agree that with everything that has not been around for over 100 years. What the fuck do we know? But they banned vaping with tobacco and cannabis products. And here's what I definitely know, that cigarettes are bad for you. So if you're going to ban vaping tobacco because it's bad for you, and not ban cigarettes?
Yeah, that is the one thing.
What?
I drove past a billboard today that was like, how many cigarette deaths this year? It was like 360,000.
It's the one
like,
outside Century City, right? That sign right there? Every time, I drive by that almost every day. And I look up and I think, but cannabis is illegal? Like, it just...
Lobbyists.
Our country picks weird shit to support.
Sometimes. I truly think Boston probably just thought vaping was douchey. And they're like, this is annoying.
It's so weird. And like, I just don't understand what the line is. Because if they said we are banning all tobacco products, then I would be like, I don't agree with that.
Right.
But I get what you guys are trying to do. But why are we banning this corner?
I'm confused.
Because of the children?
I think it's because of the media, right? Because of the way it's being covered.
There were 7 deaths this year that were deemed due to vaping.
I think it's because of it is somewhat because of the age and children. Because it's everything
kids are vaping in classes. I found that out.
A lot of vaping is flavored. And so it's targeting that young demographic where you might,
But tobacco saw that and they were like, us too. And now it's all flavored also. It's like,
Of course. Because they're all targeting the same thing and they're trying to regulate it a little bit because I think anyone, it's the same thing I think a lot of time with alcohol. Your first sip is never like, oh, this is great. Anyone who has a first sip of beer is like, this is not tasting great. Your first cigarette, probably the same way. But if you can get hooked on a flavor product initially, so they're trying to kind of get rid of that, I think.
Why don't they ban the flavorful ones?
I just don't.
I think that's really what they're doing with vaping.
Yeah, but a lot of them are not flavors. The way that we're doing this, and I know we were talking about the B word ban, but this just goes to Massachusetts. I mean, Massachusetts is so ass backwards with so many things, it's insane. Like, we are one of the most liberal states and one of the least liberal at the same time. It's crazy there. But I don't understand why we think that this is a problem, and this is the problem we're trying to solve. What? Like, we just... It's costing millions of dollars and so many jobs. Overnight, they decided to do it. All these places that have concentrates, that have their vape products, are going out of business. Like, that's what we wanted to do? I mean, give like, some kind of more than one person making a decision other than a governor just being like, starting tomorrow for 4 months.
Mm-mm. Where is the 4 months? Is it just arbitrary?
It was till the end of the year is what he was legally allowed to do. Which I didn't even know you could do that. I don't even understand
the governor.
I don't know. I don't know how you could legally...
I don't understand. I don't understand how somebody could do that or why. There's so many issues to tackle. And alcohol gets away with everything.
Lobbyists.
Everything.
Yep.
It's crazy.
That does blow my mind. I'm totally with you on the same page of like the cigarettes. Because after seeing that sign again today and realizing too of how many literal deaths there are every year from people, like 350,000. You're like, how is this still legal? Like, I'm all for people having their own choice of things, but how?
It's kind of what we've talked about before, Michael. It's like, I don't even necessarily agree that any of it should be illegal, but if one of it is, why is the other one not? Because we're not treating these equally. We're and they are. Like, what? What?
Yeah.
The world's weird, man. The world's
weird. Blows my mind. Well, I want to move into...
Massachusetts, man.
This is something that people might be listening to in Massachusetts, or listening all over the world, is Selena Gomez's new song. And it is a ballad talking about her relationship with Justin Bieber and how she kind of got over that relationship. And the song is called Lose You to Love Me. And it actually was interesting to see the shade go back and forth because she's referencing Bieber, talking about him moving on. They dated in all the way up until March 2018. And just 3 months later, 2 or 3 months later, he was engaged to Hailey Baldwin. In the song, there's the lyrics, in 2 months you replaced us like it was easy, made me think I deserved it in the thick of healing. And definitely the whole thing is about her moving on and losing him to love me. And even Hailey Baldwin put an Instagram story up of a song that says, I'll kill you.
Oh, no.
Wait, what?
Hailey
Take
Baldwin,
the high road, girl.
Hailey Baldwin put up a song lyric that was like, yeah. I'll kill you.
Won.
You. Yes. So I thought that was just very interesting. And Lauren, I was actually really interested to get your mm-hmm. take on this. As a musician, like, is there a line that musicians follow as far as shading other people? Or where do you think they have that line?
I think everything's fair game. I wouldn't, like, destroy someone's character. But if they did something to me in public, it's fair game. Like, if there was, like, oh, he got a secret surgery on his penis, I wouldn't put that
Great
in a
example.
Song.
Great example.
And his penis.
Yeah.
Secret surgery.
He got it extended. I wouldn't put that in a song. But if he did something to me publicly that hurt me, that's fair game. And, in fact, when I've written songs about people in the past, I tell them. I say, this is about you.
What do? You email them?
No, I'll send them the song or I'll play the song for them and be like, just so you know, this is about you. Especially when it's a song that's incriminating.
How do you think Bieber found out about the song? You think she told him?
No.
No, I think she has the most followers on Instagram out of any artist, which continuously blows my mind
because
I don't understand the hype on Selena Gomez at all. Whoa. That's my hot take.
You don't like her?
She's got great pop songs, but she doesn't have a good voice.
She was great in Wizards of Waverly Place, and that's where my relationship ended with her. I don't have really any interest, but I think she obviously has a massive fan base. She's doing something right, so kudos to her. I think that's how we found out. The moment, like, people have been waiting for her to release music or something for a long, long, long time, and so it was going to trend regardless. And it just happened to be about him, which is also another trendworthy topic.
Mm-hmm. I have so many mixed feelings because I think Selena should 100% be allowed to write this.
Yeah.
She's saying, you promised the world I fell for it. I put you first and you adored it. Like, these are things that she feels. And mm-hmm. so mm-hmm. it's not saying, you piece of crap, F you. In most relationships, one person moves on before the other person. Clearly, that was him.
Mm-hmm.
She was clearly bummed about that. I think any of us would be. That sucks when you're the person that moves on second. And their relationship was so public that people aren't letting her forget it. So
yeah,
and even if she wanted to forget, like you said, they're not letting her. And she couldn't. And it's right in front of her face. I think she could, like, what I try to do with my songs is write a little bit more metaphorical, especially when it's something specific that might hurt someone else, unless they really deserved it. And in this case, I mean, she's not an incredibly metaphorical singer because, you know, she's a pop singer and it doesn't tend to, like, mm-hmm. be perfect poetry. But I think because he did everything so publicly, it's truly fair game.
Yeah. Yeah. I wonder if he responds in a song.
I don't think so.
I don't think Haley would let him.
That feels like the right move, though. You know, if it's like if you're an artist, if she's entitled to that, he's totally entitled to that as well. To me, the gold standard for pop breakup songs is Thank You Next. I think that's a really, really good song.
Oh, well, I think it's excellent, but also, I mean, everybody was on her team for writing that
but
song.
The thing about that song is it's very mature. Like, it's the take on that song is like, thank you. It sounds like Thank You Next, but then like the underlying message of that song is
I love myself.
Yeah, thanks for helping me grow. But, you know, it's
yeah, but also one of the main people in the song had passed away. So, you know, I think that people were like, wow, we are in so supportive of you. This is a horrible time in your life. You're just breaking off an engagement. Your ex that you were on and off with forever just died. Like, everybody was behind her and wanted to hear from her. And this was her saying, like, I'm not going to write a song that is about how much my life sucks. I'm going to write a song about moving on.
Also, just a banger.
And a total banger. And the music video is one of the best music videos I've ever seen. This is not that same situation. I agree that it is the gold standard, but Selena is not Instagram in general. Justin Bieber's people are more obsessed with him than they are with Selena Gomez.
I don't know. People maybe, love her.
Maybe not.
Yeah, she seems like a sweet soul.
I've heard she's a very
Grammy would
nice
have no
person.
Idea who Selena Gomez is.
Really?
And Grammy would know who
it's
Justin
interesting.
Bieber is.
It's interesting. Bieber just came out with a song with Dan and Shay called 10,000 Hours, and it accompanied a music video, and Haley's actually in the music video, as are the wives of Dan and Shay.
I don't know what names you're saying.
Yeah, I don't know Dan and
Shay. Dan and Shay is a country artist, and so they just came out.
Oh, it's one person. Dan and Shay.
It's two people. Dan and Shay, two artists who are together in a band, and Bieber just did a song with them called 10,000 Hours, of like, I spent 10,000 hours trying to love you, trying to learn to love you and to grow together, and then I spent 10,000 more. It's a really good...
It's about Selena?
No. But it's interesting, like, he just came up with the song, and he was in it with... Like, the music video is him and Haley together. And so I think that...
They've been together for, like, 2 minutes.
Yes... But I feel like they've been very...
It feels like 10,000 hours. It's not a good sign.
I wonder if Selena is jealous because Bieber and Hailey Baldwin have not had any controversy publicly, I think, together and are seen as like such a great couple where I feel like her and Bieber, when they were together...
They had this tortured love affair.
You know what, though?
And then he broke up with her, and then, like, he could never really commit to her. And then a couple months later, he commits to this girl. I mean, it's the ultimate slap in the face.
Totally. I don't know if he broke up... Did he break up with her?
Either way.
Yeah.
He was very unstable when he was with her.
I was going to say, in some ways, I agree with you, Mike, that Haley and Justin are presented as this picture-perfect couple, but they opened up in, I think, Vanity Fair about, like, how freaking hard their marriage has been. So,
yeah.
I don't know. I don't know if they've been painted as this picture-perfect couple.
I don't know either of them. I've never met either of them. I don't root against anybody or anybody's love, but I think that most of the public does not believe that this is going to be the relationship that lasts. I mean, I don't think that anybody's looking at this like, holy crap, they found each other. This is endgame, endless love, so obsessed, perfect. That's not...
Wait, I had heard in the past that he wrote that awesome song, Love Yourself, about her. Do you know that song? He's like, if you like the way you look that much, then maybe you should go and love yourself. I had heard he wrote that about
Haley.
Oh, about Haley? Yeah.
The way you look that one.
But I don't have that confirmed. Unconfirmed source.
Wow, Lauren LaGrasso with that unconfirmed source.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting when they got together, because I'm like, that was a pretty incriminating song.
Damn.
Let me go to songmeaningsandfacts.com.
I don't know if you'll find it there.
Has to be
a legit source.
The best.
Well, speaking of songs for everybody at home, don't forget, if you're just tuning in now, Road to Glory, November 8th. You can find it on all platforms.
November 8th, everywhere.
And November 11th is the concert.
November 11th is the concert. Yes, Bar Lubitsch, 8:30 p.m.
So for all the L.A. locals.
All the L.A. locals, or if you're close, drive up. We'd love to see you. Love to give you a hug.
Anybody who's within 2 hours, I feel like, is an L.A. local.
Yeah.
Anywhere around then. What are you doing at the show? How many songs? How long's the show?
It's a quickie, so it's only going to be about 30 minutes long, but I'm obviously going to do Road to Glory. I'm going to sing a few of my other singles that are coming out, hoping to sing them to tracks so you'll get the full experience. I'll start out acoustically and then move in. Into the tracks.
I love
it's gonna
that.
Be fun.
Badass.
Go long. I can't even look
you still
at you.
Leave
I'm
me
gonna
on
cry.
The cajon,
I was thinking. I was actually thinking of it. I'll let you
when
know.
Michael played for you. Is that the instrument, Michael?
Yeah, the cajon. It's like a drum box.
I could not keep up anymore.
When I hear cajon, I think cajones. Isn't that balls?
It does sound like balls. Yep. It does sit beneath your balls, so maybe there's something there.
If you've got them.
Otherwise, it sits beneath your vagina. We should start calling it
vulva.
Vagion.
Vulva.
Don't even know where I'm going with that. It's at Steph Sabra. Dope shoes. I just was looking
at
those.
Thank you so
much. I don't know if they can see them in there, but she's wearing,
I've been looking at them the whole time. They're amazing.
A cooler version of bowling shoes. Is that what you described that right? Yes, yeah, Jeff. That background music.
Thank you.
Jeffrey Crane Graham.
Wow, this is interesting.
Because he's trying to promote that IG.
God, who is this angel?
I know, it's so good. It's at the Only MC, and I know you want to say something interesting.
I'm looking up who this song could be about, and there's an article on NME.com that lists several different people and evidence of who it could be. Jay Pierce. We have Kendall Jenner. Chantel Jeffries, Selena Gomez, Ellie Goulding, and all of them have like evidence of why it could be this person.
Wow.
Look at this lyric. So crazy, interesting.
I'm going to say I knew about half those names. I'm feeling really old at this moment. You knew all those people?
Yeah.
Did you know all those people?
Not all of them.
I knew Kendall.
I don't know if Chantel.
And Ellie
Goulding. Chantel Jeffries, CJ the DJ.
No. Nope, missed that one. It's at Lauren LaGrasso.
Yeah, and if you also want to listen to my podcast, Unleash Your Inner Creative, new episodes every Tuesday. Would love to have you in the community.
Lauren's doing all the things. Just follow her and she'll keep you posted on her social media. It's at Roxy Stryer. It's at Undergaro. It's at Not Sam. It's at The Tomorrow Show. In case that didn't give you guys enough things to follow, don't forget to like, comment, subscribe. We'll see you guys next Wednesday. We love you a lot. Oh, until next week, make it better tomorrow.
Yes.
Cool, word.
Thanks for having me.
Of God. Thanks for tuning in to The Tomorrow Show with Kevin Undergaro and Roxy Stryer. Be sure to subscribe to our Not Sam YouTube channel and hit us up on social media at The Tomorrow Show. I'm Sam Roberts, the last professional broadcaster, and this has been a presentation of the Not Sam Network.